folks, and welcome or welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast was brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis, a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for the past two decades, 8 years of which he's been actively buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in the city on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So his company has a dedicated loan officer in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions. So you're probably already aware that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or if you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on emil.gorgis, that's emil.gorgis, emil.gorgis@tokyorealty.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so for today's episode, we're with the Japan Real Estate Experts panel again, and this time we're digging deeper into the Akiya rabbit hole, and with a special guest, Anton Warman, a Swedish model and now a Japanese Akiya owner and renovator. He has a successful YouTube channel, 100% in Japanese, which is impressive in and of itself, but even more so as he takes his viewers along with him on his journey to purchase, renovate, and profit from older, dilapidated homes in and around Tokyo. We talk about his journey as a YouTuber, what it takes to succeed on the platform, the cost of purchasing, DIY renovating, and making an Akiya livable, where and how to source cheap building materials by building a nourishing local relationship with neighbors and local businesses, creating and nourishing a deals pipeline for would-be DIYers like himself. And then we segue into the possibility of renting out rooms or entire homes via Airbnb and other short-term stay platforms. We talk about other Akiya-related investment and business ideas, and the skills that one actually needs to successfully renovate their own home in Japan. Really good conversation with a very creative and innovative young man. Hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you again on the other side.
It's, yeah, I won't say that as I'm...
No, let's say it, Matt. Say it. Japan Real
Estate. Well, now we're recording.
Back in session. Yes,
so
say
now
it,
we're
Matt.
Recording, so I can't say it. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yes, so we are back in
that
session with
a
special guest. We'll do a quick round of intro. I'll introduce the two of you this time so we can get straight on to Anton. So Tracy Northcott, in Japan for a long while and handling short-term rentals, mostly in and around Tokyo for the last 10 years. And she is the Minpaku queen of Japan, but she's also the Minpaku queen of anywhere. She can help you fine-tune your short-term stays to a full pleasure and profitability. Was that about right?
Got it right. I'll hire you as my marketing guru.
And we got Matt Akiya and Inaka, one half of my Akiya and Inaka, and he can help you investigate, explore, purchase, and potentially renovate, I hear, any kind of abandoned, semi-abandoned, vacant, rural dream property that you are dreaming about anywhere in Japan. Is that about right, Matt?
That's about right. Yep. Thank you very much.
And we've got myself who handles, I'm one half of Nippon Trades International, and we handle investment properties and I want to say normal holiday homes anywhere in Japan. And we do that on behalf of buyers, whether they are residing in Japan or out of Japan, remotely or in person. We're trying to facilitate any kind of purchase and management and sale if and when required for people purchasing property in Japan. But today we've got Anton, and you're going to be the only one introducing yourself. Anton, go for it.
Hello, Ziv, and thank you, Tracy, for the introduction. My name is Anton, and I've been living in Japan for 3.5 years. In Tokyo. I've been on and off here for the past 5 years, but 3.5 years ago, I moved here. I own properties in central Tokyo, and I buy old ones and I renovate them myself. And I think that's why I was introduced today by Tracy. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, thank you. No, I've been watching your YouTube. You can sort of, you know, tell us about your YouTube channel and your like little journey. You know, you've got this massive following compared to, you know, compared to ours. So that was an interesting journey for me to see how the professional influencers do it. So.
No, I've so my main job is modeling, and I've been doing DIY and renovations since I was a kid. Basically, like, I'm born and raised in Sweden. I have two younger sisters, and my dad, he's done this since he was a kid. I think it's in our culture. So they bought a house that was 120 years old, and my dad and his friends, they renovated it my entire grown up, and by all the excess material, me and my sisters, we built small houses, and yeah, I just know how to deal with the tools and stuff. And by coming to Japan, it's just a different way of how they treat housing and houses here. And I was very surprised that they tear houses down that are only like 30, 40, 50 years old. Where else in my culture, we would just renovate them and you'll get them exactly as you want it. You would tear that wall down, you would build a toilet over there, a kitchen over there. And it's not hard to do. You just buy an IKEA kitchen and you put it all together. Like, anyone can do it. Me and my sisters have done it when we were like 17 back home with no knowledge, no education. Here they do have earthquakes and like natural disasters. So that's something you got to be very careful about. But so I started my YouTube journey last year here, renovating a house. I actually had a lot of footage, and I just put the footage in all together and I started editing. I had no knowledge in editing, no nothing. And I realized that it was a huge demand. People don't really renovate here on their own. And it just, yeah,
that,
I had.
That's an Akia you got, right?
Yeah, it was two Akias, actually. So I live in one Akia that I purchased 2 years ago, and then I got another one 3 months ago. And since I got that one, I've been able to like push out videos, and I've grown from 10,000 to 94,000 subscribers in 3 months.
Wow. Anton, your channel is, as far as I can tell, is 100% Japanese, which means your followers are 100% Japanese, or mostly Japanese too, right?
Yeah, like 98% Japanese. I think the rest 2% is probably my friends back home or in America, or they don't understand what I'm talking about, but they're like...
But so it's amazing to me, because we talked about it a few times, and Matt is actually very passionate about that. I'm sure he'll chime in a minute. But we talked a few times about how it's not really, and you mentioned it too, it's not that common here for people to get into DIY themselves.
Yeah.
But your follower accounts suggest otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, possibly that, or either like a lack of people having the courage to just pursue DIY. I mean, like Matt, Akia and Inaka, I don't really know much about you, but like buying an Akia, buying something in the Inaka, like the cheapest way of starting to live there is to DIY it, I guess, you know, you just...
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it kind of depends on what your budget is. Because do you mind if I ask how much you were spending on the two places you picked up, and actually where, generally speaking?
Renovation wise, or
purchase price, and then also general area.
So my,
like, where are you located?
I'm in Setagaya, central Tokyo, like Ikejiri Ohashi.
Oh, okay. So these are Tokyo. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Right.
So I think the land, I mean, like Akia, you can get things really cheap the further away from the big cities you go, I guess, right?
Generally is the case.
And then like a kitchen, I've built kitchens here
and then pick it up. I would also
yeah, sorry, I think we were lagging there.
Yeah. No, that's all right. Yeah, how much so there's that. I would say, to going back to your follower count, I was just out in Minakami at a wonderful place called Mominoki, which was like the fifth episode, I think, on our YouTube channel, the Akia Hunter thing. And so anyway, very similar to you, and I suspect on top of your suspicions about why your subscriber rate has skyrocketed, is that when this couple first bought their Akia out there, I mean, it wasn't, you know, super dilapidated, but it certainly wasn't in particularly good condition and definitely needed some work. And everybody in the local neighborhood was, none of them were mean or anything, but they were kind of just rolling their eyes at the at this couple, just being like, oh, yeah, good luck. You don't know what you got yourself into, idiots. And they opened this year, so they renovated, they bought a pension. So like a lodge, I guess, and opened for business in, I believe it was February of this year. Did a spectacular job with the renovation, all DIY too. And now that, number one, they have sort of completed their, let's call it phase one renovations, they've become more part of the local community, and they've also gotten off to a galloping start with business. Everybody around them, especially the Japanese community, is kind of like, oh my gosh, we were totally wrong. Like, we've watched you this whole time, and you crazy sons of bitches, you actually did it. Kind of thing. So I feel like the interest in Akia in general, be it in Tokyo, be it in Minakami, be it wherever, we've had basically since the start of the pandemic, pretty sustained, be it on TV shows, be it via what we're doing, be it via what you're doing, be it, I mean, there's articles relatively frequently. We've had over 2 years of pretty much sustained coverage and dynamic coverage of Akia, such that now we're starting to get to the point where, you know, your kind of typical Japanese audience is, oh my God, you crazy sons of bitches, you actually did it. Like, this is worth paying attention to now. Is kind of my read on the situation, which is a good thing, I would say. Yeah, I'll stop there because I feel like I'm about to just start ranting on.
No, but I want to hear about the you started asking Anton about the purchase price and the renovation price. I'm curious about that. So what did you, if you don't mind telling us, Anton, what did you actually put into the places?
So the house I got 2 years ago, I owned the land to this one. And that was about, so this was right 1 week before the state of emergency in Tokyo. And they had an asking price for about 31 or 32 million yen. But I got it down to 2.4 or something like that. So I got a 30 something percent discount. They tried to sell it for a...
Man, you went from 32 million yen to 2.4?
No, to 24 million
yen. To 24 million, yeah.
4 million yen? Oh, okay.
Almost 30% discount.
Yeah.
And then I put in about 2.5 million yen in renovations, and I got it livable. I was really broke at the time, and not a lot of work, pandemic, but I could be a full-time DIY carpenter for 3 months, and that was great.
So when you
a lot of it that I find is, honestly, it's just like, why the hell didn't you clean this better? If you just put a bunch of work into getting things polished or stripped down. I mean, I was doing this over the weekend at an Akia in Yugawara. And literally, it's just, oh my God, if you just stopped hoarding, this would be perfectly livable.
Apparently, I never met the previous owners, but apparently they spent 1.5 million yen on just trash disposal of this house. They've been living here for about 50 years, apparently.
Oh, no. Hoarding, yeah.
1.5 million yen.
And so
I could renovate the entire house.
And that's actually a negotiation tactic, too.
Yeah, right?
Right. And so that's because normally it's... Yeah, it's somewhere around 50 to 70 man minimum for trash disposal, because you have to rent, you know, the big steel container and trash container thing. Got to get a crew in there. They throw it all in there. Then you got to ship it, all that stuff. So yeah, just because they've been hoarding, right? It's not even a structural issue. It's just, oh my God, you're filthy. And to be honest, let me stick on this for a second, because this is actually a very taboo subject. Not a lot of people, especially in Japan, like hearing about hoarding or just don't touch it. It's just a taboo subject. Just pretend it doesn't exist. I want more people talking about it. I want more pictures. This is a major problem why Akiya don't sell. And this is also the Akiya that tend to be structurally sound. And if you just put, you know, a month's worth of cleaning and, you know, kind of getting it in order, it would be perfectly fine. But because there is so much hoarding in Japan that nobody, you know, is comfortable touching or talking about, this problem persists. This is a major part of the Akiya problem that we've been talking about for the last 2 or 3 years at least, right? So yeah, very interesting to hear your experience, Anton.
Matt, you're terribly lagged, mate. Every time you start talking, I think you're only getting us like a good 30 seconds later. So you keep cutting into us.
Oh, really? Great.
Sorry.
Let me go yell it. I will try to yell, not yell, but speak very strongly with a few people.
No, but what you're talking about, Matt, is something like I got my first property here about 3 years ago, and what you're talking about, like trash disposal and the taboo of hoarding and talking about it openly, it creates a lot of, like, in my new house here, I got it as is with like tons of stuff. Like, it was just full of stuff. Like, they left everything
there. Stuff that you can use sometimes.
I like, there's a lot of beautiful stuff that I'm gonna use, but like 95% is just trash. But I had
plastic bottles,
just like 90 square meters of just like stuff, you know, and where to even start, you know. So I had a lot of companies coming to check the place out, and like the Mitsumori, like the, what do you call it in English now again?
A quote.
The quotes I got there, like so in the end I went for someone, they charged me Nijuman, so 200,000 yen to dispose everything. And they were nice, they were really professional, they sorted everything. And I thought it was a deal because all the other quotes came in from between 1 million and 1.5 million yen.
Well, and that's the other thing, it's a racket, especially in the city. Be it rental prices, even in Tracy, I'm sure you know about leasing, subleasing, sub-subleasing. I also just jumped onto a different network, and so hopefully you're hearing me correctly.
Yeah, you're better now.
Okay. within the city, it's a racket, right? They can charge out the ass just because they can, right? And
no one else wants to touch it. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, just what about this? So, for example, for me over the weekend, guess what I did? I myself put on a work suit and some gloves and dug through trash. I sorted it. I put it into the proper disposal. I rented a K truck and I moved it all out. Right.
Nope.
And I, right.
We're,
and
living, we're living the dream, Matt. I mean, we're all in in our businesses, we all like, you know, get dirty and, sort the trash. We do this in our business as well. And it's like, it's quite healthy for you to work with your hands. Like, it's not just, you know, being an investor.
As long as it's not as
get dirty.
Well, in a funny sense, you're almost describing it as like a pro wellness sort of activity.
But Anton, when you say you put in 2.5 million for renovation, so what did that include? So DIY, I'm guessing most of it would have done by yourself. So that was mostly materials, or what was that? What did it actually break down into?
That was mostly materials. Also, I built a rental unit within the house.
Okay.
So I built an extra kitchen, an extra shower booth, an extra, like, I got a nice Toto washlet from Yahoo Auction, like Semendai tiles. I got also what Matt talked about, like with the neighbors of the people getting the pension in
Minakami in Gunma.
So like people, once I started this project, like I had the people in the local, not the home center, but the lumber shop, they were extremely helpful and they've been helping me so much. They come here and they're like, you should do this, you should do that. To like they didn't even want money, you know?
Yeah, and that's my experience too, is especially with the lumber shops, is that their business is running the lumber shop, and whatever clients they get through that, right? And so they're often enough, like they're very passionate about what they do, but it's not their job to go out and find somebody and be like, hey, there's this house over there, you should buy it, and then come to us for the lumber materials in order to fix it up, right? And so they're just sitting there waiting for some, and they see the opportunity, but it's not like, it's not their opportunity, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so often enough, especially in more rural reaches, like when somebody, when some crazy person comes in, it's like, you know what? I think I can do this. And you go to the local shops, they're like, holy shit, we found you. Like, yeah, let's help this person out as much as we can. This is going to be great. And they get really excited, you know?
No, like without them, I could never done this. Like they call me up, like, we have this wood here. You want it? We have this sink here. We have this toilet here. We have these tools here.
Do you by chance ever go out and like get beers with them now?
Yeah, I do. I do.
And see, that happens all the time. See.
No, and even now, like I started working with carpenters to like earthquake strong in my new house. And they introduced me to this 90-year-old Japanese guy. He came with his wife and he was supposed to do a 4-day job and it took him 3 weeks and he didn't move at all. Mm-hmm. And it was like they introduced me to this guy. But in the end, they called him up and like, no, you're fired. We're introducing someone new. So they handle, like they did a mistake by introducing me to this old carpenter and then they fixed the mistake as well.
Right, right. Which is amazing because often enough, if it's a mistake, it's like, okay, well, you have a mistake now and you just have to live with it. And so having those people kind of having your back is also super duper helpful. Because, I mean, these renovations, you know, as it sounds, you know, I mean, you're doing most 80, 90% of it or whatnot. But I mean, unless it's a mountaintop hermit, you know, cabin or whatever, like, it is sort of a community effort. And so people do like getting involved in it for, you know, a number of reasons, but so it sounds like you're having a very good experience.
Okay, so wait. So the first house, 24 million plus 2.5 in renovation, and now it's perfectly livable? Is there anything else that you still want to do to it? Or?
Oh, there is a lot. This house is never going to be done, exactly like my childhood home back home in Sweden. You know? It's perfectly livable. Everything works fine. Like I have a lot to learn. With DIY and stuff still, like, of course, electricity and gas and stuff I can't do. But like the more time I realize the more time you have, the better something gets, right?
And then what led you to go for the second house? So this one you're living in, what was the idea with the second one?
So the second one, I knew this has been an Akia for like 10, 11 years. And I met the owner by chance. And he asked me how I got my house. And he asked me to introduce my friend, one of my friends who is a real estate agent. And I did. And then next time I bumped into him like a month later and he asked me if I wanted to buy the house. And we talked for, this was like right when I got this house. So
Same area, Setagaya as well?
Yeah, same area. And it took 15 months and then we agreed on a price. And then I just had to get the money somewhere, and like it took 15 months, so in that time I could accumulate some money. Mm-hmm. And I was able to purchase the house, luckily, you know. I went inside for like about a minute, and because it was full of stuff and they didn't really want to show me inside, what Matt said about the taboo about the, so they were really like embarrassed about the house itself, so they didn't really want to show me. So I walked around for about a minute, checked for like termites, checked for water leaks, like crucial stuff, and it didn't look like it had any big defaults. Like I was gonna DIY and renovate it on my own anyway, so as long as it's structurally sound, I didn't think it was gonna be any problem.
But what led you to the decision to buy another house? Like if you're not gonna live in it, why did you buy it?
That's a good question. No, I think it was a good, like I'm very bored. I really like to do new stuff all the time and learn and like just, yeah, I saw it as a challenge. I didn't really know what I was going to do with it, but now I have a clear idea. I'm going to turn it into like a shooting studio. You can have cooking classes. Nice. You can have minpaku. Like the location is so good. So Like
the, and it's that property, if I understand correctly, that couldn't be rebuilt. That's why it was in, why in Akia, right? So,
exactly.
And were you able to negotiate a good deal on that one?
Yeah. So the first price they said, I got it half the price of what they were asking for. Like the owners, they were like, we want to sell it to you. We saw what you did with the other house. We want to sell it to you. How much money?
Right.
And that was kind of the discussion.
Yeah. And that,
we interrupt this broadcast. I always wanted to say this. We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, or if you just need summer quiet to hide away from the world. So they offer a variety of options for families, for corporate relocations, or simply if you're transitioning between homes in Tokyo. Now, the properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They've got fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in, a fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but long-term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profits or a holiday home that you want rented out when not in use via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth your visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at emil.gorgies, G-O-R-G-E-E-S, at tokyorealty.jp.
Yeah, and that all kind of, what you've already done kind of establishes you and the local community as like the crazy guy who can pull it off.
Yeah.
And so then it becomes much easier. We have anecdotes for onboarding clients as well of like, yeah, if you do it once, it's like potato chips. You can't have just one.
We're pretty transparent on this. We're pretty transparent on this. On these panels. Did you need to get finance? And if you don't want to answer that question, just tell me to shut up. That's okay. But the people who watch, want to try and not to spy into your life, but they're curious to see if this is a good option for them as well. So did you need to get finance, or were you able to just raise the funds yourself?
So I'm here on a modeling visa. I'm an entertainer here, which means I cannot apply for a normal jutaku loan.
Right.
And what's good with these objects that are like non, like saikenchiku fukano, like you cannot rebuild them because the road outside is less than 2 meters.
Oh, right. So no loan anyway, right?
No loan anyway, which means I'm competing against like a normal Japanese citizen as well on the same terms. We can get this property to the same, like to the same loan rate. The problem with this one was for some reason the seller wanted cash, so they didn't want me to take a loan, and I bought it cash in the end, which was really scary. I was like, with all the fees and stuff.
Yeah, well, and then also though, there's no I'm blanking on the word, not arbitrage, the middle party holding the cash until the transaction.
No.
Escrow.
Yeah, there's no escrow.
No, I had to go to the bank, like take out this much money.
Yeah,
in cash. Bring it in a backpack to the broker's office, and then
that's so funny.
Yeah. No, I mean, I remember the first time with one of our clients, when we were transferring literally it's, you're in the office with our brokers and our buyer's agents. They are in front of us on the phone communicating with the seller's representative. They said it's almost like when AOL first started, like, okay, press send now. And then they check and they're like, okay, it went through. And of course, you've kind of had this conversation before. There are legal parties involved if you do it, you know, the correct way. And so there's probably recourse. But I mean, often enough, when that happens and the lack of escrow, clients are just like bug-eyed, just, wait, are you serious? That's who's going to hold on to my, what if something goes wrong?
And Anton, I'm curious, how did you do? You said you were renting out one room, Minpaku, and I'm guessing that's maybe what you're planning to do with the second house. How did you find that to be easy, manageable? I mean, Tracy can probably give a bit of advice about, but what's your experience been like?
So I've been really lucky. So I used to live in another apartment that I also own in not too far away from here as well. And I got the first house here. And I was so broke, so I needed to find someone to move into my other house as well. And then I like moved into the apartment that my girlfriend lived in, and she lived in like 15 square meters small. So I took all my stuff and just chucked them into her room, and like our relationship have worked still. So it's a good sign, I guess. But yeah, so then I found like friends of friends, also foreigners, but with steady jobs and stuff. And they moved in to my other place, and they've been staying there for 2.5 years. They just moved out. They, with the remote work and stuff, they needed something bigger. That one was like 40 square meters. So Tracy just introduced me to a great cleaner who came and cleaned on Monday this week, just a few days ago. And I already have another guest who moved in the day after.
Oh, excellent.
So it's really easy for, like, I know a lot of people who just comes and goes for like half a year. They come here, they like, it's really easy to, I don't charge any key money. I don't charge any of these stupid fees. And I always have a relationship to the,
client. But you don't have the Minpaku licenses yet. So, I mean, that's how we cross paths, because we were talking about that. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So, yoroshiku onegaishimasu, Tracy.
Yeah.
Well, and that was another thing too. I've explored a number of sort of situations that you're in, Anton, in Tokyo. And oh my God, you know, it's, how can you even, most of the time it's just, how can you even expect somebody, you're charging how much for this? And again, you know, IKEA renovations don't need to be, we're not talking about the Ritz here. That probably will never happen. We're talking about function over form, you know, like, does it actually serve its purpose? Is it cleanly? Maybe it doesn't look like, you know, the Parthenon or something, but it never was supposed to be. Does it work? Are you safe and not wet and warm and all of these things? Are you able to cook? Is there electricity, right? It might look weird, it might look old, but if it just works, but so many of the times, especially I've noticed in Tokyo's, especially on the east side in Shimachi, it gets bad. And the owners just sit there and say, well, you know, take it or leave it. I'm charging
how it is.
And right? It's like, fuck you guys. Just like, go fucking fix it a little bit and make it into something that looks, and actually not just looks, but is functional, and then charge the same price or more. I don't care, but like, have a little bit of pride in your product, you know? I get very emotional about
this. Have you had people reach out to you once the channel was set up? Have you had any of these, again, mainly Japanese viewers, have you had many of them reach out and then share their experiences, tell you something about projects that they're interested in doing, like any kind of engagement with the people who are actually interested in this in Japan?
Yeah, a lot of them actually. It's so my channel is mostly about DIY. Like it's essentially like what I'm doing is real estate, right? But it's DIY is more, also real estate to a Japanese person is like a finance job to most people. Yeah. Like if I would say I would do real estate, no one would get what I was doing. People would think I'm a real estate agent and I rent apartments that other people own to other people. And that's not what I do. So people don't really talk to me about real estate. People talk to me more about like DIY. How do I do this? How do I do that? How would you do this? And then other people come with yeah, like, what can I do with this piece? What can I do with this piece of land? Would you do, build something new? Would you like tear down my old Inaka house, or would you build a brand new? Or I get a lot of requests like this. Also, I get from big magazines. I've had huge magazines come and like shoot in my houses as like shooting locations. I think it's mostly because Japanese apartments, they're either design apartments and you rent them for $4,000 or $5,000 a month, or they're like the most, I would say, boring, but like they're like white crossy walls with a unit, small unit kitchen, no sunlight. But my apartments, they're relatively cheap, but they're have great sunlight, they're open, they're like nice to live in my opinion.
They've got a soul.
Yeah.
So I mean,
perfect. I think that's what
to
it is.
Set up somewhere that's like a group or a forum where people can actually have these conversations, because I guess on the YouTube channel it might be like there's a bit of chat going on, but it's mostly you broadcasting and they're maybe commenting. But
yeah,
have you maybe set up a forum for people to be able to exchange information and get advice and stuff like that?
Not really. Like, I still have to figure, like, it's been going so fast. I still have to figure out who's watching my channel and like what I'm doing, what's going on, how this new house is going to be. Also, I have my real job as well. This is just like a hobby to me for now, you know. Maybe at some point I will be able to monetize it and make it a real job. But for now, I just need my house to be more or less livable, and then I can start thinking about like details, interior, what kind of kitchen and stuff.
So tell me how much, you know, you say you've been renovating things from when you were a kid, watching your family, like to the, you know, what is the level of skill that, you know, the average person would need, you know, to get in and get stuck in and actually make a difference? Because, you know, what I find here in Japan is that a lot of building companies or renovation companies, sorry Blanca, you're not here at the moment, will say, oh look, we'll take care of that for you and charge a premium. But if you go and just do the hard work yourself, how much actual technical skill do you need to do what you're doing?
Like most carpenters in Sweden, for example, like they've never undergoing any kind of education. They've just been like minarai, like for 1 or 2 years, or like they, like whenever I don't know what I'm doing, I would go to the local lumber or I would just YouTube it. You take a few hours on YouTube and you'll see what people are doing, and a lot of material is not available in Japanese, so you gotta look at American or European videos, and then you gotta source the material that they're using, and that's the hardest part being here, I think. In my opinion.
But that's the woodwork. How about everything else, like the interior? You've mentioned the tiling, you've mentioned kitchens, stuff like that.
Like kitchen is like the easiest thing there is. You just bump out the old one and then you go to IKEA and you build, like, it's just cabinets. It's like building like a cupboard. Basically the same, and then you just put it there and then it's gonna be there forever. You're not gonna move a kitchen, right? It's just screws, and you just need very basic knowledge and a lot of
good measurements. really good measurements. Has the house been square though? Like, often you find in an older house, it sort of goes off the, because they're not really built on strong foundations. So, you know, with earthquakes and things, the building may not be square. So getting your cabinets in might be a challenge, right?
Not really, because like it's just the legs, you know, you just like balance it with the legs, you just screw it and then you just check it with the level. Okay, it's straight. And then if it's not straight, you screw a little bit more and then it's going to be straight. And then you, like, before that, of course, you got to redo the walls. And then you just put the tiles in, you have a laser, or you put like threads that
I love
are...
how he adds just to the beginning of
everything. Exactly.
You just do this and you just do that and it's a piece of cake.
A lot of confidence, I would say that's key.
I mean, and what you're describing right now, Anton, is one of the steps that we take before we put in an offer on with clients, is we get one of our inspectors in there, Goman Yen. They run, they see if the property itself is square, conduct the land survey as well to see drainage and whatnot, just to make sure, like, all right, it kind of looks like shit, but actually, if you clean it up, it might be good and it won't kill you. So,
no, I was really surprised. I had carpenters in last week, and they did the this, like, they rechecked the structural integrity. I had a lot of termites, so I had to I had to put in 3 new beams, and I removed a few of them, and like put in sujikais in the walls, and like just strengthen the house itself. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's kind of dangerous, so I would like, I helped them out, you know. I was there and like just watching them work on it, like, you learn a lot as well.
Eating a sandwich and just kind of like
having a coffee.
Yeah. And what was the decision that you were going to do a Japanese only channel? Was this because you wanted to, you know, like really have a good excuse to speak Japanese, or you were trying to appeal to a market, or just it felt like the right thing?
Yeah, I'm still learning Japanese. I talked to my girlfriend, who's Korean, in Japanese, and because she doesn't speak any English. And in order for us and our relationship to move forward, I think we both need to improve our Japanese. Also, we live here in Japan. I want to be able to live here and not being dependent on other people in order to, I don't know, buy a house or sign a contract or get a loan or like just necessities, you know.
And well, why is the Japanese channel in Japanese? Like, why didn't you do it in I guess maybe not in Swedish, but maybe in English? Like, why did you choose to do it in Japanese?
So first of all, my manager at the time, I have new managers now, they told me, no, if you're going to do it here in Japan, you should do it in Japanese.
Okay.
And it was really nervous. I mean, I'm still nervous sometimes when I talk in the videos in Japanese. Like, all I do is mistakes, but like mistakes makes you better, right? It's the same. Like, I did this house and next house is going to be better. And then next time you do something, it's going to get better and better, right?
But that's just keeping it real, you know. It's like that's part of the charm, I think. And maybe that's, you know, one of the reasons that you've, you know, really grown grown the channel, is because you are showing the mistakes. So
also my friend Clara, a French girl, she started social media, YouTube and stuff about 2 years ago. So she started a year earlier than me. And I went on a barbecue with her about a year ago before I started the channel. And she told me, no, her Japanese is like splendid. She's 3 times better than mine. But she told me to do it in Japanese as well. And that was when I kind of realized, okay, it should be in Japanese. So in some way, I trusted her more than I trusted my managers, because she'd done it already. I think she had like 100 or 200,000 subscribers by now. But it just showed that it's working. And I don't know any other foreigners doing YouTube in Japanese.
No, it's remarkable.
Not many.
Definitely not DIY.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So it's a kind of a niche market, but it seems to work. It didn't seem to work for the first 6 months, but now it does seem to work. So.
And then what's on the plan? Have you got another house you got your eyes on now?
Yeah, there's another neighbor who's asked me as well, but like,
he's got the bug.
I'm broke again, so I think it might happen. If I don't get an investor, it's not going to happen in the next few years.
It's sorry, my signal or something happened and I had logged out and logged back in. Going back to doing it in Japanese, though, this is a very interesting and important point that, I mean, I'm sure everybody already thinks that, but for a lot of stuff that I do, including real estate, but also in the IT sector and in music as well, the domestic resources for music wise how to market your band's products, or like right now for blockchain stuff, like there is a serious lack of any kind of educational resources in domestic resources for domestic potential users/consumers to do anything with.
And so, Dan, do you follow him?
Yeah I'm familiar. And so what you're doing, I bet one of the real big like attraction points is that, oh my God, you're a not Japanese person presumably with different types of experiences, and maybe you cut wood differently or just like whatever, but it's accessible. It's different tool sets that are, that you're making accessible for the Japanese audience, the domestic non-English speaking Japanese audience. So yeah, good on you. That is totally a thing that occurs just all the time, everywhere, in seemingly every industry in Japan.
So you're next up, Matt. You have a YouTube channel in Japanese coming.
Sorry, go ahead.
So Matt has a YouTube channel in Japanese up and coming, right?
I've got a few things that I'm working on right now. Our current Akiya YouTube channel is English only, and we're almost at 1,000 subscribers.
So. I'll subscribe.
Anton, you mentioned investor there. I know Tracy needs to go soon, but this is probably a good, maybe a good thing to end on. So when you talk, let's say you're talking to an investor, trying to convince somebody to invest, what's the investment? What are we talking about? Is it to sell it at a profit? Is it to turn it into a guest house? Like, what sort of investors would you be looking for?
I think since most of the things I own are in kind of the same area, so it's very easy to manage. You just like, you can move around 5 minutes, you get to the next property. So I don't have an intention to sell. I'll see how good this Minpaku goes, and maybe it will be very profitable, very successful, and then you can show numbers, and then the next house, like, you have something concrete to show investors or someone who wants to invest in a possible Minpaku business, right?
Certainly, I think the space rental business is really something that is going ahead. If you can actually get a commercial kitchen license and have it usable for people wanting to shoot YouTube videos, there's a, I think the actual hourly rate that you can rent the property is higher than with Minpaku. It's higher than the overnight price. And so I think there's a big potential in monetization that way. So event spaces, shooting TV shows, movies, because all of that sort of business is just growing right now. I have a friend who runs a film production company, and they just have so much work on. The whole world is just, screaming for streaming content. So yeah, there's a lot of work coming up, and they'll be needing venues and fresh venues. So
it'd be interesting to see. I don't know, maybe there's something that Tracy can do too, but definitely Anton was already used to doing it streamed live, and to maybe document the Minpaku setup process, like applying for the licenses, advertising. I mean, it's kind of like, not all of it is going to be obviously you walking around places. A lot of that will be just you describing what you're doing on the PC, but it'll be interesting for a lot of people, because we regularly get asked, and we keep saying, well, you need to research this, you need to research that, you need to apply for this, you need to apply for that. It'll be interesting to actually have somebody document this process.
So we already have a collaboration video, Tracy.
There you go, done.
Please.
Yes. Well, and show awesome. The paperwork. Yeah, because it's a lot.
How is the time process for that? How long time does it take to get a license?
How long is a piece of string? It really depends on how, it really depends on a lot of things.
How anal the local word is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
And also how quickly you can get all the documents. So you need, the biggest hurdle is to get the safety certificate from the fire station. So you need to make sure it's got the right type of fire extinguishers, fire alarms, and then once all that's been signed off by the safety company, then you need the certificate from the fire station after the inspection, and then it's fairly fast from then on.
Thank you.
Yeah, but it's just like everything, you got to get all the paperwork, and it's not as if it's something you can negotiate. It's like, get the list of things that you need to get from the ward office and just deliver that. You can't, in other countries you can sort of just negotiate with the people, in City Hall. You just cannot do that here. It's like, They need that document. Otherwise, it does not move forward. Full stop, period, the end.
God. I heard it's different from ward to ward as well.
It is different from ward to ward.
You make me nervous now. I shouldn't have asked the question.
There'll be a collaboration video. Anyway, I'm looking at the time. I have clients to meet.
Gotta go.
Yep. Yes. Good to see everyone.
Yeah, awesome meeting you, Anton. And we'll link to Anton's YouTube channel in the comment section and in the show notes. So you can all watch his amazing work and perv on him a little bit, which I think is, I mean, Tracy's saying she was into Minpaku, but I think that's how she found out about your channel, to be honest. All right. Thanks for your time.
You and your girlfriend are very photogenic, and I guess that doesn't hurt either. So, but your personalities and the YouTube videos are, you know, they're full of energy, they're full of fun. And I think it's great. I think, you know, the more that, I like to see people working with their hands. So good for you. I think it's great.
Thank you.
Go
I'll
you.
Do my best. And by the time this episode is out, maybe the house is done. Possibly, right?
Right.
Wow. That's great. Awesome.
So you're all welcome to come and have coffee.
Yeah, it'd be great to check it out.
Whenever you
want. Yeah, awesome.
All right.
All right. I got to go. So take care.
So good talking. See you next time.
Bye.
So there you have it. If you haven't caught the Akia bug yet, I'm sure this conversation has you thinking about it a bit more at least. Really good input there. Love the work Anton's doing. Do check out his YouTube channel. We'll link to it in this episode show notes. And we've also linked to it from our YouTube page as a recommended channel. Highly advise you check it out. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.